Welcome to Talking Torquay special episode for International Men's Day 2023. This episode contains a content warning. From the outset and throughout, this episode discusses eating disorders, suicide, bereavement, and mental health, which may be difficult topics for some of our listeners. In line with International Men's Day, the purpose of this episode is to promote men's mental health with some focus on this year's Zero Male Suicide theme. Contact details for support services are provided at the end of this episode. Listener discretion is advised. Okay, it's Michelle Wills.
Wills, lovely.
Yeah.
Whereabouts are you from?
Basingstoke.
Right. First of all, if you wouldn't mind just talking me through, I understand that your daughter has been receiving care from Lee House in Winchester.
Yeah.
Just tell me about how that all came about and how she ended up being there.
Okay, she was originally admitted back in February 2015 to a clinic in Windsor. And she did the programme there, and then she came out. And then in September, she was admitted to Northamptonshire Hospital because she'd become dehydrated. And she spent a good 3 weeks in Northamptonshire Hospital. And then a specialist from Lee House came up to assess her and said that they could offer her a bed down in Winchester. She's still there. Yeah, she's still there now.
And how's she doing? How's her progress?
Very slow. She is progressing. She's back to a healthy weight. While she's in hospital, she can eat and stay on the programme. But as soon as she comes out of hospital, she refuses to eat.
How old is she?
She's just turned 16. It probably August of 2014. We went on holiday abroad, and we were noticing that she wasn't. When you went out for a meal, she wouldn't have sort of puddings or anything like that, and she was choosing salads and stuff. And then it just progressively got worse. All different food groups she would then start to cut out, until in the end, around Christmas 2015, she was just eating vegetables and salad. She's been diagnosed with anorexia.
Anorexia?
Yeah.
And so, with regards to Lee House, what's your thoughts on the service that they're providing there at the moment?
At the moment, the service is... we're really happy with the service. She's getting a lot of support there. She's getting a lot of counselling and therapy. At the moment, she's on a one-to-one. If she needs help, then it's instantly there for her. But we're really pleased with the service at the moment.
So I understand you're also now fundraising for them as well?
Yes.
What are you
doing? I'm doing the Reading Half Marathon.
A couple of months away.
That's April the 3rd, yes.
April 3rd.
Yes.
It was the 2nd of April 2019, and I was on my own in a hotel in Germany on a business trip, sharing pictures of my two Woking tickets with a friend who was a Woking fan. But little did I know that the following day I would only need one of them, because the following day Michelle, my wife, who I met following Torquay on away trips in the 90s, would take her own life. So that day was the beginning of the rest of my life. I ended up going to Woking with both my tickets, despite it being only 3 days after Michelle's passing. It was the best decision I ever made. What a game. It really picked me up. One good thing about supporting Torquay is that whenever I go to a match, I always meet somebody I know, and this was no exception. After the game, I bumped into my mate who actually introduced me to Michelle all those years ago, and later, he would also go on to suffer from depression and suicidal thoughts, which I would help him with. Going to watch Torquay United became a habit, especially away games. When the pandemic hit, I found it really helped my mental health during lockdown. It was something to look forward to on the weekend. And then once the country opened up again, it was a chance to get out there, reconnect with old friends and make lots of new friends. I'm looking at you, Jules. One of the things that is important in maintaining your good mental health is having a sense of identity. When Michelle had a bout of depression, I think it was brought on by the fact that my daughter had grown up and didn't need her anymore. So Michelle felt that she had lost her role in life. She tried to give herself a new focus by entering running events and also doing open water swimming, which really helped her. In fact, I think it was the end of the summer when the lakes she was swimming in closed that ultimately caused her to go downhill. So taking part in a sport that you enjoy, whether it's doing or watching, is a great way to keep yourself motivated and enjoying life. So how do you spot the signs of someone with suicidal thoughts? Sometimes they can be well hidden. But look out for things like the person withdrawing from social interaction, covering up arms to conceal self-harm, picking up more than a single box of tablets in the shop, acting unusually as if saying goodbye. It's also a good idea to gently and empathetically try to get the person to open up. Direct questions are best. Rather than asking, "How are you today?" if you know they have a history of suicidal thoughts, then ask them, "Are you having suicidal thoughts?" Obviously, this was only work if you know the person well, or they may take offence. So what are the things you can do to improve your mental health? Well, one of the things I find that's most helpful, especially to improve your mood, is to put on some music. So you can sing along to it. You can dance if you want to. But yeah, I find it really helps. Also, you can also go outside, and I find that if you walk maybe out in the countryside or something, amongst the trees or fields or something, that really helps. A bit of exercise of any sort, running or cycling, are my favourites. But I think research has shown that making sure that you have some good sleep actually helps. If you can sort of try to reduce your alcohol consumption or caffeine consumption to improve your sleep, that always helps. And healthy eating, of course, if you can avoid things like ultra-processed foods, eat plenty of fruit and veg. It's amazing how that actually affects your general mental health as well as your physical health. But the most important thing I find is socialising and filling your life with things that you enjoy doing. So what do you do if you just can't improve your mood, or you keep having negative thoughts? Well, the most important thing is to talk about it. Talk about how you're feeling and talk about what you're thinking to hopefully friends and family. Alternatively, you can seek out a professional. There's various therapy services available. You can contact your doctor as a first port of call, and he can put you in touch with adult mental health services or child and adolescent mental health services, CAMHS. But unfortunately, those services are inundated at the moment, especially after the pandemic. Alternatively, there's a charity called Mind who I've raised quite a bit of money for in the past, and they offer some therapy services, so you could try and contact them. Otherwise, it's going down the private route, really. If you've got private health insurance, that can definitely help. But even the private therapists are inundated. But if you need any help with seeking out any professionals, whether it's a psychotherapist, therapist, or a psychiatrist even, then I can hopefully help out and point you in the right direction. I'm also a mental health first aider, so I'm aware of a lot of the different mental health conditions, and I've had experience of a number of them by helping out family members. So if you need any help, do reach out.
Well, that was quite a story from Michelle and Al Wills there. Thank you to the Wills family for allowing us to use a recording of Michelle's conversation that she had a number of years ago. And thanks also to Al for the recording that he has done. We're going to hear now from Rob Burkett and Simon Bittleston on a slightly different theme. I have read the words that Rob has written for us. Football has been a constant in my life for over 30 years now, since I was a small kid. I was never one for the top of the table sides. Instead, I did what most kids do and went with what I picked up from my dad. He was Black Country, born and bred, and supported West Brom all his life, so naturally I did too. Although I have to fully disclose that I did have a few Villa kits as a kid and even went to a game at Villa Park. Over the years, I went to hundreds of West Brom games and plenty of those with my dad, including the famous Great Escape season final game in 2005. After maximum drama, we both ended up on the pitch with thousands of others and we'd secured safety. I still say it's one of the greatest moments of my life. Me and Dad also went to Torquay plenty of times, and having lived there for the vast majority of my life, it became a club we both loved. I actually saw my first professional game at Playmore in 1992 at the age of 5. Sadly, Dad passed away in December 2020 and our world and my head went a bit upside down. Luckily, I got a bit of professional help and chatted with my great pals, my brilliant wife, and close family members about things. The lasting effects, though, will take some time to sort out. When it comes to West Brom, I feel like I've lost a bit of a link to them now. I feel that I'm not quite able to go back there yet, as I fear I'll take a step inside the Hawthorns and just be in a bit of a daze thinking about the times we had there and miss the game. I really want to take my son up for a game when we can, but first I need to get over that little roadblock in my head. When it comes to Torquay, it's very different because it's the club that was at the top of our road when I was growing up, as well as going to school next door, and now my daughter goes to the same school. I'm around there all the time, and so I feel comfortable to go with my son and my friends. But the thing with Torquay is I feel very protective of the club. I think mainly because I get to take my son and I got to take my dad, but I never got to take them both at the same time. It's one of the things I regret the most, is we just didn't have the opportunity at the right time. As we all know, it's never boring being a Torquay fan. We always seem to be at one end of the table or the other, which means in my mind, literally every goal, tackle, card and point counts. This obviously makes the in-match anxiety levels go through the roof. You can lose a game and be absolutely gutted, or you can win one and be over the moon. But when you're not as emotionally stable as others may be, you could find yourself choking up at the drop of a hat, fried or outcome. My dad was also a union shop steward in the District Iron and Steel Works in West Brom, and a bit of that has rubbed off on me, as I hate to see people being put down and mistreated. So when I heard there may be an issue with the new owners at Torquay around 6 years ago, I thought I'd get involved with the trust. At times, I've really questioned if it's something I should be doing, as it really sets me off. Especially when you have a thought just before bed and end up looking at forums and emails until 2 a.m. on school night. And add to that the stress of fitting in work stuff, kids clubs, trust meetings and trust work can be a hell of a trigger too. But like I say, I'm very protective of our little club, and if I can do something to make sure someone like me doesn't miss out on taking their dad or kids or whoever, then they won't have to regret it like I do. I suppose I've realised writing this that there are so many ways in which football can affect your mental health one way or another. But when it comes to the experiences I've had with my dad, the great times I've had with friends, plus the excitement I have of the possible adventures I could get to have with my son, I just couldn't imagine my life without football.
So in terms of football and my mental health, the first thing I'd say is it's kind of ridiculous how much space in my brain football seems to absorb. It's like a sort of annoying ringing that doesn't go away. It might be an exaggeration to say I think about Torquay United more than I think about my children, but in some ways I'm not sure it is an exaggeration. I think that might be true. Don't tell my children that. The other thing I've realised is that football is like a kind of accelerant, is like a lighter fluid for how I'm feeling otherwise. So if Torquay win, and I'm in a good mood, I'm in an even better mood. But if Torquay lose and I'm in a bad mood, or I get cross with my children, then I'm maybe even crosser than I would be otherwise. And I think that's something I've had to recognise and kind of obviously keep under control, particularly recently, where it seems like Torquay lose more than they win, unfortunately. I also think Torquay and football is a really kind of important anchor point in my life and in my brain. It's a constant. I've been following Torquay since I was about 9, and they've been there, a presence in my life ever since. And there's something I think quite reassuring about a kind of a consistency, something being there in amongst everything else that's changing around you. And it's pretty chaotic life at times, so having something you know is always there, you can check the result at 5 o'clock on a Saturday, you can see what the latest transfer news is, you can, you know, just have it there as that kind of constant. And it's also, I've realised this even more so since having children, really kind of powerful connection to others. So it's something that both my granddads followed. They both went to Torquay games. I went to Torquay games with them. My dad, my brother, and now increasingly my own children. We've all got that connection to Torquay. And there's something very kind of reassuring about that, I think, that there's something that we all have in common. And I think that's why people get so passionate when it comes to major tournaments and when England are doing well, because you have that connection on an even grander scale, kind of a national level, where you have this sense that everyone is pulling in the same direction and feeling the same emotions and the same excitement when England are doing well. And then the last thing I think about the kind of importance of football and mental health is, for me, I find it very kind of powerful to think about being at Playmore. That kind of, you hear Robert Miles or you hear a banda, the kind of the sights and the sounds, 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, that's kind of my happy place. And sometimes I even play some of that music just to kind of remind myself of being back there. That's kind of, you know, that's where I want to be. Don't build a new stadium, Clark Osborne. We love Playmore.
So there were contributions from Rob Burkett and Simon Bittleston regarding their sort of intergenerational memories and the way that football affects the way they interact with people that are sometimes no longer with us or are yet to follow on in their parents' footsteps. Now we're going to hear from Sam Swan and an anonymous contributor. Again, the anonymous contributor's words have been sent to us and I have read them on their behalf.
Swanee here. I think it's great we live in a society where we now recognise and we talk more freely about mental health. There's still loads of work to do though. I think as a society, we need to make sure that we also talk about how we work, how we try and deal, how we try to work with these mental health conditions, what we do, every individual's different, all that kind of thing. I think one thing's talking about it, but another thing is how we can improve. Now, one coping mechanism, I have many, trying to help me get through the day is football, obviously, Torquay United, my relationship with it. Just examples, really, how football can really kind of give you that distraction, that purpose in life. Some people just have it as a social thing, so like it's a chance to see their mates. And like the football is a thing, but it's a secondary thing, so that's great for some people. Others, the football club is literally their whole like sort of family feel. It's what they rely on. I know when I was younger, I was a lot more like that. I still obviously am. A Torquay result can still kind of swing the mood of my weekend. But just going to a game, I think I've been in situations, I'm sure others have, where it's almost like you deflect your feelings a bit at football. So if you've had a bad week and then you're 2-0 down or you have a bad referee decision go against you, it's almost like it's a good way to get your anger out, really. Like you shield it, don't you? Like you're, mate, as long as you do it in the right way, it's almost like a shout at a ref or something. gets out that kind of anger. And it's really kind of good. I found that a lot growing up. So I think people react to football results in different ways. Like when we lose, I always find it interesting how fans react. So I'm like, oh, come on, it's just a football result. You know, others, it's literally like their weekends were in. I've been both, to be honest, and sometimes I can be both. But I think football is a fantastic coping mechanism, as long as it isn't a way where people obviously enjoy too many bad sort of things, which can then put them backwards. But if it's all done well, football is such a fantastic way. You know, obviously supporting Torquay is really tough at the moment, because we're seeing a community basically being killed off by slowly by evil sort of businessmen, of course. Well, that's been well documented. So that's very tough at the moment. I think that's brought it home. I think that's why a lot of people, we all react differently to it. My ones, I've been shutting down from it a bit, to be honest. Like the whole thing, I find it really difficult to go to Torquay games at the moment because of that. But then that does show kind of how we all sort of deal with these sort of things. But overall, football is a fantastic coping mechanism for a lot of people. And we just need, as a society, to keep working, as individuals, to go, right, this makes me feel happier. I need to do that in balance. What helps me distract and what makes me feel purpose in life. And I know that going to football matches, doing my football project, for example, really helps that. So yes, thanks everyone, and hopefully we can keep making progression.
Well, there's always been a connection to me, a connection to the place I'm from, the people I love, people I miss, the friends I've made, and a connection that I can use at times when I may not be at my happiest. The memories of walking to Playmore hand in hand with my dad, my brother on his other side, hearing the noise of the mighty Yellow Army as we entered through the turnstiles, something I reminisce about often, and also have to blame for the love I now hold for my club and for football as a whole. In more recent years, and particularly through the pandemic when football was taken away from us, I realised how much of a release those 90 minutes on the terraces provides. The time to forget about what's going on at work or at home, the time that you can freely shout in frustration and enjoy. On occasion, the football can also be second to the day itself. Travelling to the different grounds, visiting a local pub or restaurant for lunch, being able to decompress from the week that's been, sharing troubles or successes with those who will offer a different perspective, enables a support network that I may not otherwise have had. There are moments when a result or game can impact your mood and outlook, and also make you question whether following a team is worth it at all. In those moments, I find it sensible to leave the social media sites alone, play some music or switch on a favourite TV show or movie, and come back to the football a while later with a fresh mindset. The connection that football provides me with will always mean I go back. I will always be filled with excitement when walking into a ground. I cherish the conversations and memories created while sharing those previous goals or games and highlights with those around you. I live for the adrenaline rush and celebration when my team score a goal and we win a game. Football is so much more than a game to me, so much more than 90 minutes. It's an unrivaled connection and I would be lost without it. So that was Sam Swan, and an anonymous contributor, telling us all about how the weekend's results can affect their state of mind and the importance of friendship groups that are based around football. We're now going to hear finally from Chris Ballard. He's going to speak to us a little bit about his experiences of dealing with mental health and make a very kind offer of support to anyone who might need it.
Hi, this is Chris Ballard. You may recognise me from such popular internet opinions as goalkeepers shouldn't dive, and actually Kevin Hill is greatest player ever. I think men especially don't always do a good job of discussing mental health, and I'm here to tell you that you should. Over the years, over my many, many years, I have had some mental health issues myself, and I've also had family members who've suffered, and I think it's about time we got rid of the stigma around mental health and talking about it, especially amongst our friends. One of the best things you can do, I think, for mental health is to talk about it with your friends, especially now that it is becoming slowly less of a stigma, as I say. One of the things that we can do very well as a group of football supporters is just to be there for each other. I know sometimes the football isn't exciting and it can be quite upsetting in a way, but getting out there and meeting people and just discussing things and talking about having a joy of shared experiences, certainly for me, it's been one of the best things that you can do for mental health. Not a few years ago, I was diagnosed with some clinical depression. I wasn't given any medication because I didn't want to be on them. But over time, I learned that there are techniques that you can use to help you understand your mental health issues. And the first one of those for me was accepting that you're having some sort of mental health crisis. Without acknowledging it, I don't think you can move on from it. For me, I was very lonely and I felt very isolated. I'd gone through a breakup. It's not very interesting. And it took me some time to get out of it. And I think that had I had a support network, even of strangers, to help me get around, I would have come out of it a lot sooner. Luckily, I was able to, and life now is fantastic, but I do think it's important to reiterate that there is help available for you. I would imagine anyone listening to this will at least be aware of my existence on various social media platforms. So if you are having any kind of mental health issue, my DMs are open. Figuratively, I don't know if they actually are, but you can reach out to me and I can make sure that you can contact me either as a friend if we are friendly or as just an interested party if we're not. So even if you don't feel like you know me very well, please reach out. If you don't have anybody that you feel you're comfortable doing that to, reach out to me. Also on the other side of the coin, my mother had some mental health issues. She was diagnosed with bipolar depression fairly late on in her life, which ultimately led to her death. So again, I think it's important that we as people are there for our family and friends. So I would urge you to make yourself available as much as you can. I know sometimes it can be scary and those conversations are rarely fun, but again, I do know from experience that if you're able to talk out with people, you can help them in ways that perhaps you didn't even think that you could. So yeah, that's all I had to say about that. Normally at this part of the recording, I would make some mob gag, but that's not what we're here for today. So please, if you are experiencing any mental health stuff, reach out to friends, to family, to strangers on the internet, if necessary. I can be any of those, probably not family, but please be aware that there are people who care, even if you don't know them yet. Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to this Talking Talkie International Men's Day special. Thank you to Michelle and Al, Simon and Rob, Sam and an anonymous contributor, and Chris for their contributions. The theme of this year's International Men's Day is Zero Male Suicide. If you or anyone you know needs assistance, feel free to call Samaritans on 116 123 24 hours a day. Mind on 0300 123 3393. Calm on 0800 585858. 58 58, or on the web chat between 5 p.m. and midnight every day. An extreme emergency call 999.